Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome back to Prospects to Pros on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler, as always, with Lance Zierlein. On today's show, we're going to answer your questions, different topics, draft, NFL rookies. We want to get back to our position-by-position breakdown, what we're evaluating at the running back position. But first, I want to touch on the Senior Bowl. We're now over 60 invites, close to 70. And really, the quarterbacks are what's standing out early on. We have five accepted invites so far, including Kyle Trask, who Jim Nagy told us on last week's pod is the Senior Bowl's highest-ranked senior quarterback. So no real surprise there, but you haven't already, I encourage you, go back, listen to that episode, hear Nagy's thoughts on Trask. Texas A&M's Kellen Mond, Texas's Sam Ellinger, Georgia's Jamie Newman are also invited. Then there was a surprise name last week, the fifth guy, Notre Dame's Ian Book, who has played well this season, but still a little bit of a surprise. I mean, I still grade him as a PFA prospect. Surprising to see him part of that mix. And really, the moment that was announced, it kind of became clear that the Senior Bowl is probably going to take eight quarterbacks this year, which Nagy did later confirm. And the reason I say that is because they have to keep two spots open for Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones, two juniors who are on track to get their degree, or Mac Jones already has his degree. Trevor Lawrence is on track to get his degree in December. So the chances of Trevor Lawrence playing is very, very low. But you have to make him say no. You have to keep that spot open for him. So Lance, your thoughts on the quarterbacks who are confirmed, at least at this point, is there a certain quarterback that stands out for you?
So I know who Sam Ellinger is. I kind of feel like I know who Kellen Mond is, although I do think Mond is performed better this year with a good running game and an offensive line that is on the Joe Moore Award honor roll for best offensive line in college football. And I'm telling you, I think they're going to keep on rolling towards the semifinals as well for that position. So I think Kellen Mond has played better, and he's got interesting size and athleticism combination. You and I talked about him in a much earlier podcast. Sam Ellinger, you know, I know who he is. I mean, he's a tough guy. He's got some limitations. Book is okay. I could say Kyle Trask, but the fact is I want to see Jamie Newman because when I watch Jamie Newman's tape, and I've already written him up, but I want to see what he does in the Senior Bowl. You know, he doesn't work with great anticipation. I thought his arm was okay. He was not as great an athlete as I expected as a runner. He was more of a volume runner than he was an explosive ball carrier, and I thought his decision-making was just okay as well. I feel like right now he's a developmental prospect, one of those like fourth round types. I call it a 6-0, mm-hmm. a 6-0D, which is developmental fourth round. And I need to see him more. He didn't play this year. I think this year would have been a big year for him. But if you just operate off tape, he's not a guy that I feel comfortable taking on day one or day two. So I really want to see what he does in the Senior Bowl to maybe convince people that he is that guy, that the physical traits, you know, you can bank on the traits because he is a projectable talent. So I would say of all the quarterbacks, he's the one that I'm most intrigued by moving forward.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And it's going to be a big week for him after he chose to opt out. You know, last year in the ACC at Wake Forest, you know, he finished second in that conference in, you know, total offense and total touchdowns. Had a pretty nice year that kind of, you know, grabbed attention setting up his senior season. But of course, we don't have that. And so, you know, he's a guy that when you watch him, he avoids that killer bad decision. And he seems to make plays when they present themselves. But I didn't think he was a consistent creator on tape. You know, he's sturdy, good-sized kid. He's mobile. He's a confident quarterback. But his reads are undeveloped. The pocket presence doesn't really get you excited for what the next level is going to throw at him. So I agree with you. He's a developmental level player who, I what's his ceiling as a quarterback in the NFL? I mean, I kind of tend to think based on what we've seen so far, it's maybe a Jacoby Brissett type of quarterback, which, you know, Brissett's a low end starter, high end backup. So I don't know, you know, how much that's saying, but I do agree with you. I think, you know, somewhere early on day three is where his draft stock is right now at this moment.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And the thing with when you look at, for example, you're going to have an interesting comparison between Jamie Newman and Kellen Mond, for example, from a size standpoint, guys who both can get outside the pocket. But Mond is a legit runner who, to me, he's very reminiscent of when I was at Senior Bowl and watched Colin Kaepernick coming out of Nevada. And Kaepernick had a little they both have distinct releases, only I think Mond actually, from a technical standpoint, has some things over Colin Kaepernick, but Colin had some special athletic talent as a linear player. With Newman has been working, I believe he's working or going to work with or is already working with Quincy Avery, who is going to be the quarterback coach. He's a quarterback coach for Trey Lance and also obviously Deshaun Watson. People know that. So I'm really intrigued to see what version of Jamie Newman, who opted out this year, comes into Mobile. A guy, I know there's going to be more invites. You always have to keep your eye on the juniors who have graduated because they're the ones who can, you know, roll into one of those spots. And I know that Jim wants to carry 8 quarterbacks this year. Are you intrigued at all by Kenny Pickett from Pitt?
Oh yeah, no, that you got my next question was going to be, okay, so we've got 3 more spots, and I'd be shocked if Kenny Pickett isn't one of them. I mean, I think his physical traits don't jump out at you. You know, his hand size is going to be talked about way too much. He's a smart quarterback. He knows where to go, find the vulnerable spot. He's very quick with his reads. I'd be shocked if Kenny Pickett doesn't get one of those spots. And then let's say Trevor Lawrence doesn't go, and let's say Mac Jones does decide to go. So that leaves us one more spot. And, you know, then we're talking about Felipe Franks, Shane Buechel, Derek King at Miami. What do you think about these quarterbacks that are kind of still left on the table as options?
You know, I always look at the most upside. I don't see the quarterbacks you mentioned. Buechel, from his start at Texas to where he is now and his consistency over the last 2 years at SMU, I think he would intrigue me most. I think I feel like I know who Felipe Franks is, so I'm not as excited. I don't think Derek King is going to be a quarterback on the next level, but that also makes him intriguing because it'd be kind of cool to see him run some wide receiver or running back and quarterback, maybe work out at multiple positions. Charlie Brewer is okay. You know, there's a kid out of Liberty who's a redshirt junior. I don't know about his status for graduation, but Malik Willis, who had come from Auburn, has put up some pretty decent numbers for a Liberty team that, you know, I think he could be a very interesting potential guy. He's a run pass quarterback, so he might be somebody to keep an eye on if he does indeed graduate as a redshirt junior. So those are some names to keep an eye on. I'm not excited about the back end, but I'm pretty much never excited about the back end quarterback prospects at the Senior Bowl. But I would say there's a little bit more here from a name brand standpoint. And I do think if I had to pick one, it would probably be Buechel because he has had 2 strong years and he is a former University of Texas prospect who, you know, had enough chops to be recruited by a team like Texas and now has put some pretty good production together over there at SMU.
Yeah, going back to Malik Willis, Liberty, the Auburn transfer, he's really interesting. I mean, you can't really ignore that production. A lot of touchdowns, very few turnovers. Just personally, I would love to see him go back because when you really break him down, he's staring down his targets. He's predetermining decisions, too willing to throw off balance, and that really affects his placement. But man, he's exciting. He's fun. You see that poise, athleticism. He's a decently built player, so he can run through arm tackles and create with his legs. And I mean, that's really what gets you excited is just that dual threat ability. But he's got decent zip on his throws where he can push the ball too. So he's a lot of fun. No question about the talent. Just hopefully, I really like to see him get another year of seasoning at the college level before he's thrown to the wolves in the NFL. One more question for you on the Senior Bowl, and you know, like I mentioned, we're almost at 70 confirmed invites. Of the guys who have been invited so far, is there an invite for you that really has you excited? I'll give you my guy first. I think it's Kadarius Toney of Florida. That's who I. I'm really excited to see. His special athlete is so elusive.
Explosive.
His joints are rubber. I mean, it's crazy how he's able to move the way he is. That start stop, that suddenness that he brings. But you know, his routes are going to be put under a microscope in those one on ones. He's at Florida. He's more of a gadget player. When he is asked to run downfield routes, you see, you know, way too many steps. He's wild. He still gets open because just his natural explosiveness, but you really want to see him rein it in a little bit, be a little more controlled with what he's doing. So can't wait to see that. And even though we don't get to see the interview process, that's going to be crucial for Tony's evaluation down there in Mobile. He's a little complicated with his off-field. Teams are going to be focusing on their efforts to really figure him out. So what about you, Lance? Who is someone that you just can't wait to see down there in Mobile?
Well, there's really two. I don't know if I should cheat your question at all, because I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll mention one, Nico Collins.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's somewhere in that N'Keal Harry blend that you're not sure that he can get separation, but he is going to test well. He's going to run faster than you think he plays, the same way N'Keal Harry did. It's just you're worried about separation, but he's great at contested catches. My comp is N'Keal Harry because I feel like he's got some of the same characteristics where he relies on contested catches because he's big, strong, and able to do it. The guy that I'm really excited about, though, is Spencer Brown for Northern Iowa. He's right tackle. He's a former tight end. He came into school or out of high school. He was about 215 pounds. Northern Iowa decided to offer him based on they kind of eyeballed his frame. I'm actually working with the former analytics director for the Tampa Bay Bucks, Tyler Oberle, and we're working on a program, and we're talking to different colleges because Tyler can take measurements, body type measurements, wrist, knee, height, weight, your wingspan, and he can project. He's got data where he can project what your frame type is going to be, which is invaluable when you're talking about a 15, 16, 17 year old guys who are late bloomers or, you know, who are going to grow into their frames. And I bring that up because, you know, all these colleges are extremely excited about this stuff that we're doing and really mainly Tyler's doing. But that's the way that they found, they just use the old eyeball test. He had a coach come in and basically just kind of eyeball his frame and said, yeah, you know, he's got thicker legs. He's got this, that, and the other. He's broader shoulders. I think he can carry more weight. So they brought him in. He's 100 pounds heavier now than he was in high school. They brought him as a tight end. He became a tackle. Dane, you've watched him. He's extremely athletic. When you watch him, it's hard not to see some semblance of Lane Johnson when he was a junior at Oklahoma because you say, well, you know, he needs to get stronger. Spencer Brown is one of the most physical finishers of anybody that I've watched on tape for a while. Like, he looks to absolutely bury and embarrass you. He's very strong, but he's also 6'8 plus. So he's got a high center of gravity. So there are going to be some issues. Even he's a bender. So he still gets his pad level dropped, but it's still going to be, you know, there's still going to be players who play under him. So it will be a little hit or miss, but I just see some things athletically that I'm very excited about. He's very, very tough. I think he's going to have about 35-inch arms. And so there's a lot of and I think he's capable of playing left tackle. If Jedrick could do it, move from right to left, I think that from an athletic standpoint, I have no doubt that Spencer Brown from Northern Iowa can play. And the cool thing about Spencer, I think, and one of the scouts told me that he loves the fact that he had a chance to transfer out as a graduate transfer, and you know, go play somewhere else, get in the portal? And he said, no, this is the only team that offered me, and I'm loyal to Northern Iowa, and I'm not leaving Northern Iowa. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Brown is, he's really interesting. He played eight-man football in high school, and he was a five-sport standout. So, I mean, he wasn't, groomed to be a football player, and especially an offensive lineman. But
shot put, discus, and wrestling. Yeah. Those are the big three for offensive line coaches. They love those three.
And you throw on the Iowa State tape from last year, and you see a guy who's not shy getting physical. He really loves that physicality part of the position. The competitive toughness is evident on his tape. He can mirror and pass pro. I mean, there's a lot of things there that you want to work with. And now, you know, the appropriate draft grade for a player like this is tough. And I think that's really why, we can't wait to see him in Mobile to kind of figure out, okay, how far away is he from really giving you meaningful snaps on an NFL field? And who'd you like better, him or Raidens at North Dakota State?
It's not even close. I didn't like Raidens that much.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't understand
where's this stuff coming from on Raidens. They're not even, I was expecting to see them both on the same level. Raidens he's a tough guy, but he's not near the athlete. I think Raidens is a potential kick down to guard where he can be a tough guy on the inside, but I don't see I don't even think it's comparable. I think Raidens look more like, I know he'll get drafted higher, but to me, he looks more like a fourth. And I think Spencer Brown is a Sebastian Vollmer type who could turn into, an early two. And, if he has a great senior bowl, he didn't play this year. If his body type, because he's also really well built, like lean muscle mass, wears 320 exceptionally well. I'm telling you, I think he's the guy that's going to get hot in this process. I really do. And it wouldn't shock me if he ended up with a push into the first. But I think top 50 is a lock for a guy like Spencer Brown with his length and athleticism and toughness. As long as you think he can play with the anchor strength necessary, I absolutely think that. And now he's better on the move. He's better on the move than as an inline blocker. But I don't think it's close between Raidens versus Brown.
No, I don't either. Raidens is not a top 100 lock, where Brown, I think, is. I graded him as a late two, early three, along with like Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State. He's one of the top five offensive tackles, senior offensive tackles, I should say. But yeah, there's a lot of foundation traits there that you want to work with and you want to really coach up. And the Senior Bowl will be big. The one big thing that really bothered me with Spencer Brown's tape is he's just a little too reactionary. He allows pass rushers to set things up and then he tries to react. And a lot of times at the FCS level, he can get away with that. But, it'll be a much different discussion against NFL level pass rushers. So it's something where he needs to play out more in front. And that's something that a guy like Rashawn Slater at Northwestern does so well, and why I think he's a tackle is because he stays out in front. He engages, that first contact, and he wins early. So that's something that I think Spencer Brown needs to work on as well, and something that he's working with Joe Staley a little bit as he prepares for the Senior Bowl and the combine and the pre-draft process. So, really eager to see, what he looks like, because we haven't seen him in a while. So that's a great pick. Spencer Brown is a player who has a ton of ability. And I think you're right. He could end up being a riser when it's all said and done, when we're leaving the Senior Bowl this year. So
yeah, big, long, athletic. My grade on him right now is a 6.36. And on my draft grade, a 6.36. Possesses a talent to become a dependable starter within the first couple seasons, should be an immediate contributor for any team he joins. I could see him getting an early start at a tackle spot or being shuffled into while he learns, because he didn't play football this year. So, yeah. Being shuffled into a swing tackle position, but a 6'3 is a plus starter in the league. So I feel very good about him. Now, Rashawn Slater, I've got a 6.71. I think he steps in as a starter immediately day one. And he is, so far, of the guys I've written up, which is not a ton, but I've got final write-ups. Michael Parsons is my top guy up to this point, and Rashawn Slater is two. So that's kind of, how I'm looking at that.
Yeah, no, I agree, right? Rashawn Slater, he was OT two for me behind Sewell in the summer. And even though he hasn't played this year, I mean, nothing's changed. I mean, Slater
Sewell's probably going to be – I've watched enough Sewell to know what he is. He's got dumb explosiveness into blocks, like pulverizes people. But I'm saving him because I'm headed up to see my parents for Thanksgiving. So I'm bringing all the Sewell tape I have. And my dad, whether he likes it or not, is watching I'm going to watch a lot of Penei Sewell with him. And we did that with Tristan Wirfs last year. And I'm going to do the same thing with Penei Sewell this year.
Okay, well, we have our topic for next week's podcast.
Yeah, we do. We do. I can get him on. I've got a – if you want to talk, you know, Penei Sewell and offensive line stuff, I know a guy.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. Well, that's great because, yeah, this is – it's a weird offensive tackle class because we have, I think, a clear-cut top guy. And then, you know, there's – you know, you and I both love Slater. But then there's a lot of, you know, guys up in the air who show talent, but, you know, they have their flaws. Guys like, you know, Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, who I'm a big fan of. Alex Leatherwood, who probably a better guard, but can he stay at tackle? Maybe. You know, Jalen Mayfield at Michigan, Samuel Cosmi at Texas. You know, Eichenberg has played well for Notre Dame.
Yeah, we have some depth. I mean, there's some depth in this year's class.
It's kind of the opposite of last year, where last year we had five guys going to the top 20, you know, these big-time talents, and, you know, then the depth really kind of fell off, where this year we might only have one going to the top 15, one tackle going to the top 15, but then there's some pretty intriguing guys in the back half of round one, into rounds two, and then maybe even into round three. So the tackle class, especially with these juniors come out, guys like, you know, Abe Lucas at Washington State and, you know, Cosmi and those guys. So it really is an interesting group of tackles just outside of the top 15 picks.
Walker Little, he hasn't accepted, or has he been offered? Has he accepted by any chance?
He has been offered. He needs to accept. I mean, I think he's crazy not to go to the Senior Bowl. And we haven't seen him. And
if he doesn't go, then it's going to look like he's avoiding the Senior Bowl.
Absolutely. And I mean, he's got smart people around him. He's a smart guy himself. You know, he needs to show that A, he's healthy. You know, he had the knee injury last year. And, you know, being able to go to Mobile and show that he can move around, he's, you know, there's no rust, there's no, you know, lingering effects of that knee injury. And then just to show where he's improved, you know, go out there and compete. So hopefully, and especially in a class like this, where it's a competitive group, it's going to be the littlest things that that teams might use to stack these guys on their board. Walker Little has plenty to gain by going down there to Mobile and competing.
Oh, without question.
I mean, and did you? I know you graded him. Did you? What did you give him based off of what you just the brief 2019 stuff, and then the 2018 tape?
Yeah, I gave him a 6.23, which would be a third rounder.
Yeah,
a prospect with some limiting factors who should become a good NFL backup and may become an eventual starter. When you have a 6.3, I consider you an eventual starter. A 6.1 could be a good backup. I watched one game in 19 because that's all he had, one game in 19. He looked a little bit stronger, but for me, and I had a disagreement with a league personnel guy, but I feel like I'm right on this one. I think he's got to get stronger. You see, when, you know, the ability to press somebody off your edge, when a defensive end gets in, let's say you're slow with your hands and he's trying to turn a corner and he gets into you and your arms are there by your side and you got your hands on him, that ability to bench press him off, to press and extend a player off, is how you redirect a rusher. A rusher may win the first phase of the battle, but you need to win, but you know, the blocker needs to take over in the second phase, neither anchor if an anchor is necessary, or extend and redirect the blocker. And that's something that I really haven't seen from Walker Little in 18 tape and the one game in 19. It's my biggest concern is his natural core strength. How strong is he? Is he strong enough to keep a strong player from running right down the middle of him? There's lots of things I like. I love the way he moves from a lateral standpoint. And, you know, he's fairly technically sound. But you have to be strong enough. You just have to. It's a non-starter. So strong enough. You don't have to be strong, but you got to be strong enough. And I need to see that because right now I can't put him any higher than a third-round grade for me. Mm-hmm. If I'm picking a football team. If Ezra Cleveland goes in the third, there's really no reason I put Walker Little any better than that.
Yeah, no, it is a player who could really gain some momentum at the Senior Bowl, help his bank account. Hopefully he decides to go. So I put out a question on or a call on Twitter to give us some questions. Got a lot of good ones. So appreciate everybody that responded to that. Won't be able to get to all of them, obviously. But starting out here from at Colts with Grant, Julian Blackman, who we've touched on this year, defensive rookie of the year candidate. If he's not the defensive rookie of the year, who is? And Blackman, he seems to make the right plays at the right time, impact plays, and he did it again against the Packers with that forced fumble in overtime, just a big time play in the right moment. And we talked about him before, how Chris Ballard give him the credit for taking a guy who had up and down moments in college, coming off an ACL injury, to take him in the third round. And he's paying immediate dividends for the Colts. So just a player who's playing at the highest level. Do you think he is a legitimate defensive rookie of the year candidate? Do you think he's the favorite right now? Do you think he's top three? How do you kind of stack up? Because really, to be honest, offense is one thing. Joe Burrow, who unfortunately is out now with the knee injury, but Justin Herbert's been outstanding. The wide receivers have been ridiculous. The offensive tackles deserve rookie of the year love. But on defense, we really haven't had, Chase Young's been great when he's in there, and I think he's in that discussion. But the defensive rookies really haven't really brought the same impact plays as maybe some of the offensive guys.
Yeah, I would say right now, and actually it's fairly bunched up, I think Patrick Queen, because he's going to have the production, right, has a natural advantage, but his team's not playing great right now. Patrick Queen, Chase Young, but from a defensive standpoint, Jeremy Chinn, Antoine Winfield, and Julian Blackman. You look at these teams. Now, Chinn is not on a winning team. That hurts his his chances, even though he's going to put some numbers up. But Antoine Winfield is going to play on a winning team, a playoff team. And Julian Blackman, the ability to come back from his injury and play at a high level is, for a good defense, is really, really impressive. And I've seen the odds on it. The latest odds are something like plus 700, which would make him a 7-1 underdog. That's great value if you just want to look at it from a handicapping standpoint, because he is going to continue to play. He is going to continue to make his mark. And while he may not stack up the tackles like Patrick Queen does, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't think that Julian Blackman is making as many or more impact plays, where he's popping during games. He's flashing during games. And so, I think I think when it's all said and done, Blackman will be one of the top three. And Chase Young may not even be a top three guy if he doesn't stay on the field and become more productive.
Yeah, and he's out there and he's playing well, but I agree. It's an award that is based a lot on production, and so sack numbers will matter for a guy like Chase Young and his candidacy. And fair or unfair, the fact that he was the number two overall pick and widely considered the top non-quarterback in the draft, with those types of statements come expectations. So if he doesn't meet those expectations, then I agree. And part of that is because of the injury stuff. But Blackman's definitely in the discussion. Antoine Winfield, I think, is absolutely in there as well. A few other players. I mean, Jalen Johnson's played well for the Bears. He's had his rookie moments as well, but he's played well. I mean, I thought Trevon Diggs might have been able to get there for the Cowboys with how he played before his injury. So, a couple of these rookies have really stood out, but not like the offensive guys, which is a much tougher field, although, Justin Herbert could run away with it now that Burrow's hurt.
I think he will. I mean, we've had some great wide receiver years, without question. Mm-hmm. And like you said, frankly, Herbert's probably going to hit 30 touchdowns, which is going to lock him in to break the record. And look, he's been fantastic. He's exceeded everybody's expectation of him early in his career. The game doesn't look too big for him. He looks like a leader. He's been very consistent from a production standpoint. I do think that this year, I do think that the offensive lineman deserves some credit, specifically Tristan Wirfs. I do think that, you know, if they really were honest about rookie of the year and how guys have played, for example, I'm looking right now at the top five, and it looks like this. Herbert's the favorite, followed by Burrow, followed by Tua, then Justin Jefferson, then Chase Claypool. Now, yep. Claypool and Jefferson, 100. Claypool's got 10 touchdowns now.
In 10 games, yeah.
He's got 10 touchdowns in 10 games.
Yeah.
So Claypool deserves a ton of credit and love and should be up there. Justin Jefferson should be up there. It's way too early for Tua to be. I mean, honestly, Chase Claypool, Justin Jefferson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and probably Tristan Wirfs deserve to be your top five. And, you know, you have Edwards-Helaire has had a nice year. Mm-hmm. Harrison
Looked
Bryant
better last
has
night.
Had a nice year. You know, there's been some
Jedrick
guys.
Wills.
Jedrick Wills has had a really solid year. So, it's been a good rookie class. The year of quarterback. I asked you this earlier in the year. Will this go down? And you said offensive line, and I said offensive line. Or tackle.
Yeah.
Will this be known as the tackle draft or the quarterback draft? I'm not so sure anymore. Previously, yeah. I said the tackle draft, but man, I didn't expect Burrow to do this. I didn't expect Herbert to do this.
Yeah, and you know, Jim Nagy made an interesting point about this upcoming class of quarterbacks because what guys like Herbert and Tua and Burrow are doing are they're setting expectations for what an early top 10 quarterback should look like. And whether that's fair or not, perception's reality. And so, you know, can Justin Fields come in and do what Justin Herbert's doing? Can Zach Wilson come in and do that? I mean, it's a really interesting dynamic when we have this rookie class of quarterbacks that's playing so well, so early, and then an upcoming class of quarterbacks that is getting a lot of hype for the amount of talent. You know, we could have four going to top 10, top 12. But how, you know, and then comparing the two, it's a really interesting dynamic that, I think you're right. I think this is, at first looked like going to be a tackle or a group known for the tackles, but it's skewing hard towards the quarterbacks.
Yeah, it really is. And, hey, that's fine. I mean, this is the first time that we've had, this is when you look at Fields and Trevor Lawrence and, you know, some of the guys coming out this year and what's to come, it's hard not to be excited as a football fan because I get to watch the transition of college to pro, and we all do, but when you look at how deep the quarterback positions are getting, like, there's not as, you really go through and look at teams that need quarterbacks. I never thought I would say this this fast, but Philadelphia needs a quarterback. I mean, I don't know what has happened to Carson Wentz. Let me ask you. I had somebody ask me, it's kind of off script here, but I had somebody text me today. I was doing my radio show this morning, and they said, does Carson Wentz's regression hurt Trey Lance? And the obvious sentiment is North Dakota State quarterback. Now, right off the bat, I say no, because Wentz came out playing really well. His second year, he was like 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
Right.
He was really, really good. I don't even recognize the guy I see on the field anymore. This looks like somebody who's, you know, a clock struck midnight and the carriage turned into a pumpkin. I don't even recognize Carson Wentz anymore. However, is it crazy? I don't think it would be the case, but is there any chance that Wentz's regression would make anyone nervous about Trey Lance, who's coming from the same school?
It's a similar conversation with Dwayne Haskins struggling. What does that mean for Justin Fields? And, you know, I personally, unless you can find a common denominator besides just the decal on the helmet, then I don't put much stock into it. That was the thing with, you know, Texas Tech quarterbacks. Yes, they all went to Texas Tech, but they all came in the same system. And so I think, you know, Wentz, they're playing slightly different offense with Trey Lance, even though it's still a run first offense. And, you know, there's going to be some similarities, but I think there's enough of a gap there where there's a lot more differences between the two. And I'm not holding it against him. But people will, just like they're going to hold it against Justin Fields, that Dwayne Haskins. And really, I mean, you look, boil it down to, when's the last Ohio State quarterback who panned out? I mean, there just haven't been many, although I would argue there haven't been many that were supposed to. Don't give me Cardale Jones. I mean, Troy Smith, JT Barrett, you know, you can go farther back, Craig Krenzel, and, you know, the further you go back.
This is how I know you. This is how I know you're from Ohio. You went all the way back to Craig Krenzel.
Joe Germain and Steve Belisari. And, yeah, trust me. But, I mean, that's kind of the point. Like, there's not many quarterbacks from Ohio State that were supposed to be big-time NFL quarterbacks. And so Justin Fields is different. I mean, he's, even though he's coming off the worst game of his career against Indiana, threw three picks, still had three touchdowns, threw for 300 yards. You know, it's part of his evaluation. But me personally, you know, I don't put much stock into where he went to school based off of another quarterback going there, unless you can find another common denominator, and that's maybe a certain coaching point, you know, a certain something going on with the training, you know, something with that scheme, something like that, which I don't think is applicable here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't typically. Now, from a scheme standpoint, if you see scheme, I talked to the quarterback coach and passing game coordinator over at North Dakota State, and we talked about what you know, we talked about where Trey Lance is relative to when Carson Wentz was there. But you know, one of the things he said was, this kid is exceptionally intelligent when it comes to football IQ, really lives in the film room. They do something where, and I've got it written up here, so I want to make sure I get it right. On Tuesdays, he studies – on Mondays, he studies opponents' personnel groupings defensively. On Tuesday, he studies his opponents' third downs and what they like to do on third downs from a pressure standpoint. On Thursdays, they work on two-minute offense and how to attack the two-minute offense. This is just on tape. And then on Fridays, he does his own cut-up of red zone stuff as well. So, and I'm talking about the cut-up is the quarterback room does that. So this is a player in Trey Lance, and you know, you want to talk about system. They do a lot more full field reads over North Dakota State. If anything, they allow you to operate. He sets all his own protections. What I'm trying to tell you is, don't look at Carson Wentz. Trey Lance is going to be more ready for the mental part of the NFL game than most of the prospects who will be in this year's draft at quarterback position. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And he's at North Dakota State. Most guys do not prepare like this. And he's already preparing like a pro.
Very, very interesting. That's something that will show at the combine, you know, in the interview process, when they really, you know, get into the X's and O's part of it with concepts and, you know, what he's seeing in terms of reading defenses and setting protections and things like that. And it's such a, you know, an interesting dynamic for him, because he's not on the field, but he's still maximizing his time in terms of developing and growing. And you still have to execute on the field, but still, that's really, really interesting with Lance, and something that will undoubtedly help him in terms of the draft process. And, you know, we'll have to kind of wait and see what it means for his NFL future. Okay, moving on here for the next a couple more questions here. From at Dave GT5, how many edge rushers will or at least should go in the first round, and is it a strong class? It's an interesting class, because we've been spoiled with Myles Garrett and the Bosas and Chase Young, you know, those premier pass rushers. This year, we might not have a top 10 pass rusher. I don't think any of these guys are locked to go in the top 10. But we've got some interesting players in the first round. A guy like Kwity Paye out of Michigan, who, you know, if he tests like he's supposed to, he's going to go somewhere in the top 20. There's plenty to like about him. Rousseau from Miami, we've talked about before, who was so dynamic last year, but, you know, did a lot of his production came from lining up inside, and he's just has so little experience at the position. And, you know, that could be looked at as a strength or a weakness, because he's still has a ways to go before he can reach his ceiling. Jason Oway's just about as talented as anybody in the country, just still putting it all together. Joseph Osai from Texas, you just wind him up and let him go, and you know, good luck slowing him down. He just never quits fighting and scratching, crawling to the pocket. Aziz Ojulari from Georgia is one of my favorites, who another guy who's still young and still figuring things out, but the natural athleticism could get him in the first round. It's a really interesting group of edge rushers who don't necessarily have the proven resume, but there's traits that you can point to and say, okay, that's why this one's my favorite.
Yeah, I'm curious. Do you see any similarities? Not just in terms of stature, because I do think that. I mean, I'm already on the record as saying I think Quiddy Pay with his stature and his strength and mm-hmm. his frame, I think he might be an interesting reduced rusher on the next level, where he can just use his quickness and explosiveness to be an interior rusher. It's not going to surprise me if he can carry 285 pounds that looks good on his frame. But when you see his size and the way he comes off the ball, I can't help but a little bit see, and they're different body. They're similar. He's not as big, but Josh Uche, you know, the way he's built so low to the ground and he plays like that. Quiddy Pay kind of plays like that. They're just different. They're different sizes of the same type of rusher. I think the middle round offers some really interesting, Rashad from Oregon State, I think he hasn't gotten off the mark yet. But I think he could. He's coming off a 14 sack season. Joe Tryon, who opted out, but from Washington, I think is a high energy rusher to keep your eye on. A Senior Bowl invite is Shaka Tony, who he's not consistent.
Did you like him?
You know, I didn't love him last year, and I wrote him up. But what I said, let me pull up what I said, because I thought he might be coming out.
He has a great first step. That may be what I like most about him, but
yeah,
I don't know. He's a guy who he's undersized, and you know, he doesn't play with consistent power in his rush, and that really bothers me.
I don't see the urgency. I don't see the finish. I gave him a 6'1", which is more of a quality backup. I said smooth and athletic with ability to burn and bend the edge. His explosive get off with good forward lean, maintains rush speed beyond the arc. While he's dangerous around the edge, he lacks play strength to convert inside counters and speed to power charges. Slippery with his ability to work around blockers at the point of attack, but he may not be strong enough to take or tough enough to be trusted with early down duties. And what I'm telling you by throwing these things out here is I don't trust him to stop the NFL run, so now mm-hmm. we're dealing with the designated pass rusher. Because right. if he's not big and tough and strong enough to play the run on, or when I say he can't, he may not be able to play the early downs. That means we're talking about a DPR, designated yep. pass rusher. And once Agreed. You start talking DPRs, you better really be special to get drafted like in a second round, like the Bruce Irvin types. When he came out, he was just such a freak athlete. For Tony, I see him more as, I saw him more as a middle round pick.
Agree. Yeah. Same thing here. He's speed reliant rusher who just, when he tries to use power, it just stalls out too quickly. So I'm with you. And there's other guys in this class, you know, like Rashad Weaver from Pitt, who I yeah. really like. You know, I think he's somewhere in the top 75 discussion. You know, Boogie Basham at Wake Forest, the Myjai Sanders at Cincinnati, I think's got a lot of ability there. So this pass rusher class is what it lacks in high end talent. It more than makes up with in rounds, or the late one through round four of just really intriguing players. So it really is a good group. Last question here from at KHedge 48. What is your favorite position to evaluate and why? This is a great segue into the final topic here. We'll touch on. We wanted to talk about scouting the running back position, which I know is your favorite position to evaluate. Why is that?
You know, I think it gets to the fact that I've studied so much run game stuff and offensive line stuff. You know, my dad being an offensive line coach, well, offensive lines block and they block for people. And so, you know, my favorite stuff is watching running backs and linebackers, because these are some of the most instinctive. I love seeing that that ability to just know what's going to happen, almost like linebackers who know what the play is. Well, running backs who feel the blocking scheme and who recognize where holes are coming from, even where if they seem to see, like I'll go back and watch in slow motion, did this guy see or feel the pressure come? Did he hear something? Because how does he know to make a jump cut right there? And for me, watching outside zone teams, watching running backs who recognize cutback lanes, watching guys run gap scheme stuff where they have to run with power and a fearlessness and a courage to attack downhill into an area where the block hasn't quite cleared, but they've got to trust their blockers. And if it's not quite there, make subtle shifts to really wiggle through smaller, tighter holes. A lot of what we're talking about, look, you can find runners to run outside zone, but there are also special running backs who do more for you and with their talent level. And I think that for me, the reason, and we'll get into some of the things we look for, but the reason running backs are so fun to me is because I think on tape, they tell you who they are in two games, and you start to see who's the most courageous, who is the most competitive. Like, man, Devin Singletary, this was just like crazy watching him. And two of my favorite guys to watch over the last 2 years, Devin Singletary 2 years ago and Zach Moss last year, for different reasons. Well, one was ultra competitive with just crazy wiggle and elusiveness. The other was ultra physical and ultra competitive in Zach Moss, with the desire to absolutely challenge your manhood every time. And now they're on the same team. And I just think you see a player's personality at running back. You really do. And you see special traits and special abilities and sometimes a sixth sense of how to process on the first and second level. So that's, for me, Dane, that's one of the reasons I just really enjoy watching running backs.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. It's also one of those positions where I was taught that you should be able to tell pretty quickly. You know, running back and linebacker, you should be able to tell pretty quickly, you know, how quickly they see things, the way they can break it down. You know, just do they have that feel to them? They can sense what is about to happen, but they still have that vision where they have an escape plan. And that ability to not only instinctively sort through what's in front of them, but then also have the quickness to clear holes and take advantage of it. Because there are some guys who have the vision or the anticipation to see what's happening, but they don't necessarily have the athleticism to hit that hole and make it happen with the right timing. And that's why I love J.K. Dobbins last year so much. He seemed like he was so natural with that. Not only could he sense what was about to happen, but he hit it at the right time with the right movements. And, you know, even though he was, I think, the fifth running back drafted, I had him rated as the number one guy because he was so natural for him. And that really stood out to me when I watched his tape. So it really is a fun position to evaluate. And so let me, you know, if I put these three traits, rank these three traits at the running back position, vision, contact balance, creativity. If you had to rank those 1 through 3 in terms of importance, in terms of evaluating and translating the next level, vision, contact balance, creativity, how would you rank those?
I would say vision and contact, and then creativity last. And the reason I say that is because if you have great vision, you can avoid certain areas of traffic. If you have contact balance, you can create additional yards through contact with your ability because you have a natural, you're instinctive in terms of your ability to counter balance. Contact balance is really, to me, you either have, you play with a wider base, and for some guys, it's a genetic thing in terms of where, how your hips are and how your base comes out and how you run. But the ability, you know, when you talk about contact balance, there's a counterbalance where you feel contact coming and you begin to alter where your weight is shifted. And, you know, I study this stuff going slow motion because I find it so fascinating, the sports science of it all, where you see guys who are able to, for example, keep their shoulder square. It's one of the best way to run, you know, to have that contact balance. But then the ability to offset your weight in a different direction and shift it in a different direction so that you can absorb a hit and yet keep your body square, as opposed to having too much of the contact drive you off of a point of balance and a center of gravity. And so contact balance is something that I think is, it can't be taught. It's instinctive and it's physical. You either have a certain physical capacity and a certain instinct to shift your weight in your body when you're being hit or when you anticipate hit. And that's also where vision comes in, being able to see where that is. But players with vision can create the most out of what is there from a blocking standpoint. Now, I love creativity. And in your question, really, Dane, I don't think there's a wrong answer, because I think those are the three most important. I would put burst up there with the two. But I think what you mentioned, there's nothing worse. I'll give you an example. I just wrote up Javion Hawkins. He opted out from Louisville. I really enjoy watching him run. He is a really fun outside zone runner. But what's funny, and this happens from time to time, he's got some creativity and some subtleness to his movement on the first level, but once he gets him on the second and third level, he's just not as creative. He just, once that traffic gets to him, he's more likely to just kind of finish his runoff or not be able to get away from those runners. And it's because he doesn't have the great contact balance, because he's kind of got a thinner, lower body, and he's just not super creative. I would say if you have two of those three characteristics that you just mentioned, if you have two of the three, you got a pretty good chance to make it in the league.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think that's a good way to wrap it up for today. I agree with what you said there.
I've got one question for you. Do you view mirrors, that every position has a mirror? And I'll tell you what I mean. To me, offensive tackles and pass rushers are trying to get the same things accomplished. Cornerbacks and wide receivers are trying to get the same thing accomplished. When we were talking about, you were talking about linebackers and running backs, you know, sifting through the bodies and the traffic, to me, they're mirror images. To run in the alley is the same as, for a linebacker, is the same as being able to keep it play side and turn the corner for a running back. Like, I feel like they're mirror positions. A safety mirrors a quarterback.
Now, that makes 100% sense. And for me, at the running back position, you know, I try to boil it down to as few words as I can, just to make things simple. And so for running back success, it comes down for me for two things. Can you navigate and can you create? And that's basically what, if you're a linebacker, that, and you're playing downhill against a running back, you're mirroring that position. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to navigate through everything, not just physically with your ability to take on blocks and force your way to the lane or the ball, but also with your mind, because you're trying to break down, you know, you have your keys. What are the linemen doing? You're trying to read the backfield and see through blockers. And so you're navigating physically and mentally, and then you have to create, you have to finish, you have to make something happen, at wherever, at that contact point, wherever it is, at the soonest point it can be. So that, I think that makes sense. It's, and that goes back to one-on-ones at the Senior Bowl. That's why those are so beneficial, because you're seeing these guys, and it could be a little more advantageous for one side over the other, just because of the situation that they're put in. But I agree with you. It's a good way to evaluate the position.
Yep. Well, it's been a good talk today. I really love breaking down these positions with you, because I know we see them similarly, but I always like, you know, I had a running back coach who once told me, Lance, and he's a longtime running back coach, and this is some great advice that I'm sure you know, and I'm going to throw it out there for listeners who like to evaluate. He said, if you can't create for yourself, either through power, speed, or elusiveness, then you're going to have a hard time staying in the league. You have to be able to, you can't just be a guy who gets what's blocked and stick around in the league. You may stick around for 3 years, but eventually somebody's going to be able to do one of those three things and you'll be gone. And I've always remembered that. And I want a running back to have at least two of those characteristics if I think he's going to be special. And if you think about the special running backs in the league, you'll find that most of them hit two. Some of them, like Adrian Peterson, could hit three. But almost always, you have to have one of those features where you're really good at that if you're a good running back. If you're a special running back, you can hit at least two.
Well said, well said. And that's a good way to wrap it up this week. You can find Lance at Lance Zierlein on Twitter. I'm at DP Brugler. As always, please subscribe, rate, comment. We really, really appreciate that. And we'll talk to you next week.